This is Sierra Dahl with Municipal Sustainability and Energy Forum, and today we have Okshon Bayugan, who will be talking about her research that she's done with the University of Connecticut, and talking about why cities and towns, some are proactive and other ones are not particularly interested in renewable energy. What's the difference? So Okshon, why don't you go ahead and start us out?
All right. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you, Sierra. First of all, for including me in this group. I've really enjoyed the conference call so far, and I know a couple of people already on the conference call today. I think Bernie and Mark are here. They've heard the versions of this project before, so hopefully it won't be too boring for them. But it's great to be able to share my findings from my research and get some feedback from such experts with you all. I'm a political scientist who is interested in the politics of clean energy transitions. So the political framework is in some ways very intuitive, but maybe surprisingly, much of the energy transition literature until very recently paid very little attention to the role of agency, the role of power and politics in understanding transitions. I would argue, given the urgency and scale at which a transition needs to happen, government intervention is extremely critical, and essentially this whole project is a political project because politics explain why certain energy sources and policies are prioritized. It tells us a lot about actors with different interests and powers and what roles they play in setting the policy agendas, shaping the discourse, supporting or suppressing niche industries. And policymaking is inherently very political because it involves making hard choices and producing conflict in the process of picking winners and losers. Famous saying, you know, behind policy, there's always politics. So in that sense, that's why I'm interested in this topic. Most of my research has focused on comparing national policies, energy policies. In fact, currently I'm writing a book on Turkish renewable energy politics. And a lot of the literature stays at the national level and to some extent the international sort of politics behind climate negotiations and energy choices and so forth. But I'm finding more and more interesting the local level of sort of politics and policy dynamics. Here, especially in the United States, given the federal institutional structure and also the lackluster performance of the federal government when it comes to sort of consistent clean energy reforms and vision, I think there's more and more interest in what can be done at the subnational level. And a lot of that attention is focused on state-level policies and state-level dynamics, and very surprisingly, very little on the local government level analysis. I think to more fully understand the challenges and opportunities in clean energy transitions, we need to pay attention to the local policy environment. I find like two reasons for this, especially. One is that there's a huge variation across towns and municipalities in how state policies are implemented. And supplement it with new ones. Even though there are studies show that local governments in states that support clean energy are more likely to take a proactive role in energy policy, their performances vary significantly when we control for state policy. I would say there's also a huge theoretical reason why local governments need to be studied, because as the layer of government closest to the citizens, local governments are in a better position to understand and respond to unique challenges and needs of their community, and also frame the clean energy discussion in a way that connects with the values of their citizens. Local governments can also lead by example, communicating and creating opportunities for energy efficiency and consumption of renewables because they manage substantial amounts of infrastructure. They can do a lot with their municipal buildings and operations and so forth. And finally, they have regulatory authority over transportation, permitting standards, building codes, financial incentives, et cetera. So these are the reasons why I'm interested in the local determinants or determinants of local governance and understanding why some local governments are more proactive than others. I choose Connecticut towns for a number of reasons. partly because I live here, and I've been sort of interested in the sort of the variation in across Connecticut's 169 towns and municipalities. There is a home rule tradition in Connecticut where state constitution grants towns authority to pass laws to govern themselves as they see fit. And also with no overlaying county structure and a strong northeastern sort of tradition of participatory government, Connecticut towns have significant autonomy in managing their own affairs. So very quickly, let me give you a little bit information about my methodology. As my sort of dependent variable is the thing that I'm looking at, I focus on clean energy engagement. These are initiatives that governments use to incentivize and increase energy efficiency and use of renewable energy in municipal, residential, and commercial buildings and operations. There is, I think we've talked about this in a previous conference call, that there is a lack of accurate and sort of up-to-date comparative metrics and also data on municipal initiatives and performance. I think this is improving, but it's still very for researchers, this is still a big challenge, and it was for me as well. I was able to find a data set put together by Energize CT, CT Greenback, and Utilities. It's the Clean Energy Communities database, which has categorized 169 towns, almost 169 towns, into three categories: gold, silver, and bronze energy communities, based on five indicators: their commitment to clean energy goals, their level of municipal action planning and benchmarking, their ability to earn and redeem federal and state grants, the extent and effectiveness of their outreach efforts, and their adoption rate in terms of municipal energy use and percentage of efficiency participation by residents and businesses. So using that data set, again, there are a lot of challenges with that data set as well. There are a lot of inconsistencies, and but it is a starting point, and it's the only sort of comparative data that was available to me at the time. So I conducted over 30 interviews with government officials, municipal staff, and volunteer groups, and using the political economy literature, bigger literature on transition, I tried to look at three broad mechanisms: the role of policy champions, the strength of public support for clean energy initiatives, sort of the town culture, and then finally the institutional structure of decision-making in town governments, their bureaucratic capacity of the relevant sort of town departments, and also volunteer-based energy task forces. So very quickly, let me go through my findings with you. The policy champions, my study of these 15, I guess I forgot to mention, I picked five towns, sampled five towns for each category. So I had about 15 towns to study. My study confirmed that the critical role played by policy champions. I was interested in who these champions are, what their sort of positions, titles, why they were interested in clean energy policy making. And I found very sort of interesting results there. These individuals come from all kinds of different backgrounds, and they have very different reasons to be involved. Some of them are elected officials or municipal staff. In other towns, it would be a town resident who founded and volunteers in the Clean Energy Task Force. But there is a lot in common that I found, that these are individuals who are very proactive, resourceful. They're very connected. Most of them serve in other board and committees in town. They join statewide networking events. And they use similar strategies. I find this to be really interesting, two that I want to focus on. One is that they tend to frame clean energy as an economic development issue, and they highlight the economic benefits of engaging clean energy proactively. So I thought that was a very successful sort of strategy, and it was very common among them. And also, they were building on previous successes, the sort of idea of a policy feedback that locked in successful policies was, I thought, was very effective. That is, you know, successful projects get emulated and they get modeled after, and that there's a contagion effect of sorts. So one of the big findings is that the existence of change, and this may not be very surprising, and it kind of fits in with broader literature, that existence of champions is really the difference between action and inaction in towns, perhaps more so than at the national and state level. Next, I looked at town culture, and this is a very sort of difficult concept to measure. But again, the literature sort of tells us we can look at several things. One is looking at the political affiliation or the party identification and ideology in towns. Those who study environmental and energy policy at the national and state levels in the United States find that party identification and ideology are strong predictors of attitudes and policy outcomes. When it comes to renewable policies, that partisanship still exists, but it visibly declines when compared to environmental issues, for instance. And I found that in these sample towns, partisan ideological differences mattered even less at the local level, that local clean energy engagement is for the most part functionally nonpartisan, because towns that cast more ballots for Republican candidates in recent elections have been as ambitious in these towns in their clean energy engagement as Democratic-leaning towns for the most part. So I find that result, that observation, very encouraging, especially at a time of deep polarization that paralyzes policymaking at the national level. I think this is a sort of a very refreshing sort of observation. I've also looked at the tradition of grassroots environmental activism in towns to see if that made any difference. And the results are a little mixed here. The interaction and synergy between town governments and community environmental groups provide additional human capital and resources, and clean energy leader towns are the ones that are able to harness that energy and support coming from community groups. But there are also towns that were able to make progress without a lot of public support. In fact, in some towns that I interviewed, town officials said that they preferred that volunteer community organizations did not get too involved, that they, if you know, having a community that is not interested or knowledgeable about energy issues actually helps them proceed more smoothly and faster. So it was a little bit of an interesting sort of observation there. Another sort of aspect of town culture, I looked at existence of big business, so the business structure in towns, the existence of big businesses and educational institutions that are supportive of clean energy in some ways made the job of energy champions much easier, and those towns seem to be doing much better in terms of energy performance or engagement. But then towns that are characterized with numerous small or medium-scale businesses that rent their office space seem to not have that kind of a business government synergy. They almost didn't want to be involved in any energy planning and many of the energy initiatives by the town government. I also looked at the extent of local resistance to clean energy projects. This is in the big literature is known as sort of NIMBYism, right? Not in my backyard kind of citizen activism. This kind of local opposition is seen as a big, really important barrier to renewable energy development. I found NIMBYism to not be that strong or prevalent in Connecticut so far, and I think that's partly because NIMBYism is connected to wind development, wind turbines, and in Connecticut we have a very limited wind development. I think we're starting to see a little bit more NIMBYism around shared solar projects or microgrids, but it's still in the early sort of phases, I would say. So town culture, the effects of town culture is very difficult to reach definitive conclusions on, but there seem to be consensus that a community that is relatively well-informed and engaged matters in how a town government performs in the clean energy area. Finally, I looked at the institutional and organizational capacity. Again, this is a very under sort of theorized, understudied aspect of energy transition at the national levels as well. So I find this to be really interesting. I looked at type of local government structure, for instance. In Connecticut, there are three models, the selectmen town meeting model, the mayor council model, and manager council model. I'm not going to go into the details of these, but I find one of the differences to be in terms of where executive power resides and how and to whom executive officers are accountable to and how effective and professional their management is. And even though there was a lot of consensus around the manager council, the advantages of the manager council model, I think when it comes to clean energy engagement, at least among the cases that I looked at, the town government structure didn't seem to make a difference. So among the leader towns, the gold categories, the structure was split. Same kind of variation existed with the silver and bronze communities as well. But it's interesting. I found that in all of these models, the professional management and flexibility, those are all were seen as great sort of assets, but only to the extent that the manager is or the selectman is personally interested in and committed to clean energy. So it's almost coming full circle to the importance of policy champions. Where they sit or what the what kind of institutional basis of power they have may not matter as much. I also looked at the availability of skilled town staff. That's one way of sort of gauging bureaucratic capacity. And there was a lot of consensus around this, that leader towns do have a decent number of staff who are trained and are able to, you know, accomplish tasks given to them, or they, in many cases, lead the efforts. And not having bureaucratic support seems to hamper or slow down the initiatives. Again, this is perhaps not surprising at all. Actually, one thing that was really interesting about this variable is, in some towns, the problem seemed to be that there were too many staff with overlapping jurisdictions and redundancy. So, in some towns, they talked about infighting and turf wars. Lack of communication and conflicting personal agendas as major barriers, bureaucratic barriers that policy champions face. So that part was, I think, a little bit more interesting. And I think the wealth of a town has an effect on the staffing conditions. Richer towns or towns with more resources tend to hire tend to hire more staff. And in some cases, more skilled staff as well. And finally, very end here, I looked at the existence and organizational capacity of advisory bodies like the Clean Energy Task Forces. Connecticut has roughly half of the towns in Connecticut have these community initiatives, Clean Energy Community Initiative. They assist and advise local governments around clean energy policies. And despite some stylistic differences, again, I found that all the leading towns have very effective, resourceful, and connected energy task forces. In most cases, they have a town official or staff member attending regular meetings to ensure there's clear lines of communication. The leading towns have well-developed websites and strong social media presence to connect with the community. I think these are very instrumental in organizing and mobilizing for events and campaigns. And the towns that had no task forces or just symbolic ones with no real advisory powers had a harder time focused on clean energy and finding enough people to carry out the necessary tasks. So as a conclusion, I would say the structural characteristics of towns, the receptivity of the public, and the efficacy of sort of decision-making structures, they all matter and they provide the context, but only if the champions are in place. And only if they have the right, individuals have the right personalities and resources to work with each other. So in a way, I was expecting a level of this going into this research, but I was really surprised by how much human capital really mattered in local governance. and how much it mattered putting the right people in the right, you know, individuals with knowledge and skill and also passion to carry out clean energy reforms. That was an interesting conclusion. But it sort of cuts both ways, too. There's an element of randomness and unpredictability to this. Relying on a champion to make all the difference is sort of tricky, because if a town manager or a volunteer on an energy task force who has been personally committed to clean energy leaves office or dies or whatever, and the incoming person has different priorities and interpersonal skills, the momentum of energy transition can be easily lost. And, of course, the opposite is true as well. If someone new with a background and interest in sustainability comes along, the fate of clean energy changes dramatically as well. So I think to overcome this sort of randomness and uncertainty, towns need to formalize and codify energy goals and priorities in town documents, and they are, to some extent, doing this. But they also need to set in place mechanisms and institutions to make sure that these policies sort of continue. I found, for instance, a sort of a establishing a permanent energy specialist or manager position to be very productive, and recruiting the right individuals with skills and expertise is another effective way. And then finally, two conclusions, again, going back to the strategies that are used, I think framing clean energy initiatives is a cost-effective way of saving money for the municipality and also its residents. That appears to be a very powerful and effective strategy. And also this idea of successful policies to create a positive feedback. I find this in the literature, in the academic literature, sort of a growing interest in the importance of policy feedback. The idea is that the makeup of coalitions supporting and opposing policies can be influenced by the sort of the nature of the previous policies. So in other words, policy makes new politics. I find that to be really fascinating, and I think we see some of that at the local governance, that the sort of successful policies create a new dynamic, a very positive feedback, and ensures the continuation of reform. So I think I'll stop here. I'm sorry if I talk too much. So I'm open to your suggestions and feedback.
You definitely did not talk too much. That was fascinating, and I'm sure everybody else felt the same way. So I have one question for you, Wuxian.
Sure.
What motivated these people to become interested in promoting renewable energy in their towns, even if the administrators, do you know?
So those people who were hired to do this, they have obviously a professional background in sustainability or energy technologies and so forth. So that's sort of an easy pathway in a way. But volunteers, I found, and I know we have a couple of them here, talk with us. I know Bernie, Mark, they are part of these energy task forces. But I found that some of these volunteers were just personally interested in issues of sustainability. They had I remember talking to individuals who said they had they were in their own personal lives, they were making all these changes, clean energy consumption choices that they were making kind of inspired them to broaden that and to help their communities be aware of these possibilities. So a lot of these individuals are personally, I think, sort of committed to clean energy and sustainability, and not all of them have a professional background in this. And in some cases, they educate themselves through these sort of task forces as well.
All right. I want to open this up to the rest of the panel. I see we have quite a few people here. Michael Walton. Yeah. Do you have any comments on this?
I just came in towards the middle or the tail end of that. But I who is speaking? Sorry.
Oksan Blayman.
Yeah. So I completely agree with everything that Oksan said in terms of how important those sort of internal champions are, especially when they're given sufficient both political and financial resources to sort of do that work. And indeed, I've seen both sides of what she said in terms of when that person, you know, leaves and what happens to those efforts. All of that certainly rings true from my experience.
Anybody else have any comments here?
I actually have a question. This is Rick Reepstein.
You want to just introduce yourself first so we know who it is?
This is Rick Reepstein from Boston University.
Hi.
And Oksan, I'd like to know if you're sharing your report with state officials. I think from what I heard, it sounds like the less rich communities need some help. They need some staffing that has the kind of abilities, if it's not being supplied otherwise, if they're going to catch up. So maybe the state can step in and help some. Are you in communication with state officials?
No, I'm not. I mean, I have been in contact with some individual analysts in the DEEP, the Department of Energy and Environmental Protection. But I this is an academic work project, and I submitted it for publication, and so I guess I'm waiting for the results of that. But I'm in contact with civil society organizations, the Clean Water Fund that sort of organizes these energy task force meetings. So I've been in contact with them. I've gotten a lot of feedback from them, a lot of advice, and so I'm going to share this with them. And then some of the energy task forces have asked me to share my findings with them. So I'll try to reach as many people as possible, I guess. But I also, I want to say that I was interested in that sort of question about whether or not the wealth of a town is determinative in this, and to some extent it is. The staffing is very much linked to the wealth of a town, I would say, but not exclusively. And there are a lot of other. I find the biggest, in some ways, missing element here is knowledge and information around opportunities and funding. There are funding opportunities from the state and other entities, and so I feel like it's more about the information, not having access to information, as opposed to just the wealth or the fund, the financial resources. And I think organizations like Clean Energy Fund or Water Fund, or Clean Energy Communities, what they're doing, trying in terms of sharing that information and sharing that knowledge or spreading that knowledge, is, I think, even more important.
Anybody else?
Hey, Sierra, it's Bernie Pelletier in West Hartford. I would add to what Oksan just said. I think, far be it from me to say money is not important, it is, but what I see lacking is information and an understanding of what's possible. And I say that because so many of the technologies that we're promoting are actually economically winners almost right out of the box. For example, LED lights. While money might pose some systemic problems, you might not have an energy specialist, but if they had the knowledge that it was actually going to have a payback of, say, 2 years, that tends to overwhelm the lack of money at the beginning. So I really do think political will, knowledge, champions are like the primary force at this point in the adoption.
Anybody else?
Yes, this is Evan Hughes.
Go ahead, Evan.
My question is, what kind of technology and activities seem to be the most important? We've had mentioned in passing of shared solar as one, and just now LED lighting. Are these activities done on municipal buildings or others?
There's the ones that you mentioned, certainly, but also solarized sort of awareness campaigns that towns do on solar, for instance, solarized campaigns to inform residents of the advantages of using solar power, the energy efficiency relamping of municipal buildings, the putting solar panels on top of municipal buildings or school buildings. These are all sort of some of the common initiatives that I saw. They're sort of, in some ways, we can categorize them. One sort of category is increasing awareness and doing sort of these public events and to sort of share that information, as Bernie said, to sort of talk about the opportunities and the possibilities. And then there are others that are more direct in terms of municipal sort of infrastructure to increase in energy efficiency, but also generate renewable energy sources. And then also, I would say, connections with the businesses. The town governments have sort of have a number of initiatives to encourage businesses to become more energy efficient. And so there, I feel like there are three prongs to this. One is obviously the towns themselves, what they can do and lead by example. Another is the civic sort of connection, the awareness and information campaign. And then the third would be to, I would say, incentivize the businesses and make, through regulatory sort of incentives, make it attractive for them. That was my observation. I don't know if others want to add on to that.
This is Michael Walton. One of the other big challenges that we're seeing is the sort of regulatory even potential. And so, a lot of that is driven in most of the country by the state's regulatory authority that is, basically setting the rules of the game for the utilities in that jurisdiction. It's much more difficult for cities that are in states, for instance, that are in the Tennessee Valley Authority area, where there is no state regulatory authority that has jurisdiction over the federal Tennessee Valley Authority. And so TVA sort of sets its renewable energy generation targets, which are substantially lower than most of the other utilities in the rest of the country, and the cities are forced to sort of play within the rules of that game. And so in some cases, even if a city, were to say, let's have, 100% renewable energies by 2040, if TVA doesn't let them have that capacity, then they're not really able to do anything about that. And so that's, I just want to sort of point out that in some cases there is a limit to how much cities can do, even in the best of circumstances.
I totally agree with that. And in fact, I worry that the big piece, missing piece in my research is the role of the utilities. And I've heard during my interviews, I heard a lot of reference to the utility relations with the town government relations with the utilities. I didn't look at the sort of the state utility relations in terms of the regulatory authority and some of the rules of the game for the utilities. But I find that is really fascinating, that how utilities respond to towns' demands for increasing production and consumption of renewable energy. I think that's going to be critical. I totally agree with you. I, in a way, it's sort of hard in maybe Connecticut, in the sense that there are only there's really two utilities, and one of them is very dominant. And so and I expected them to have the same kind of relationship with the towns. And so I didn't expect a huge variation in terms of town utility relations, because it's so dominated by this one utility, and there's another one. I guess the differences between those two could be studied further. But I totally agree with you that there is that constraint.
This is Bernie. On the utility question, I would make an observation that, speaking legally, the utility is given a monopoly, and in exchange for that monopoly, they submit to some regulation. And part of that regulation, and I got this idea from somebody who works for one of our utilities, they are really the utilities are really the expression of the collective will of the people that they serve. And I know some of you are perhaps throwing up in your coffee as I say that, but I think there's a role that we citizens have, that we have knowingly or probably unknowingly given up. In other words, I think we have more agency and more legal power than we know or have taken advantage of. And I'm not talking about a Marxist revolution or anything like that. I'm just saying that as we in our task forces come to understand what we want, and that there's many, many people out there who want the same thing, I think we have the ability to influence those utilities more than we have. Having spent a little time in Massachusetts, which is served by some of the same utilities, I can see that the way Massachusetts forcefully expresses its will to its utilities is in some ways stronger than what we've managed to do here in Connecticut, which tells me that the same utility will behave differently depending on the regulatory and political will in the states that it serves.
This is Rick Riebstein, and you may want to respond to that, but I just want to say that I totally agree, and that the expression of that ambition has to involve a representation at the hearings that the Departments of Public Utilities hold, the Public Utilities Commissions. So it needs to manifest itself there. And I think cities need to be working together to do that. So my question to you, Akshan, is did you see much evidence that cities are working together to form a unified political voice?
Oh, that's a great question. No, I didn't, actually. In fact, what I found is, in some ways, the cities, these towns, I mean, granted, these are small towns for the most part, but they kind of work in silos. I mean, there is some networking that happens, and, again, Bernie is part of a group that kind of tries to bring some of those stakeholders together. So there are those individuals who are connected to other towns or even state institutions, and they follow, you know, the information and exchange information. But I found, for the most part, that towns are not aware of what's going on in other towns. Again, there are exceptions. There are, you know, in a way, it's a sign of success, too. Like, the leading towns are the ones that have that information about what's going on in other towns and kind of replicate it. They want to learn from the best practices. But for the most part, I would say those connections are not there. And so I can't, I mean, as much as I agree with Bernie that, and it would be wonderful to sort of study the same type of utility responding differently in other, you know, different states. That would be an amazing research project. But I don't know if the towns have that collective will or the capacity even to demand certain changes. Maybe through the people that they elect, obviously, the state government can maybe change that relationship. But I didn't find it in my research. It's interesting that you asked that because I would be in some ways telling the towns, the energy task forces, what is happening in other towns. So there was that sort of lack of communication.
I would like to just make a quick reference to the Urban Sustainability Directors Network in terms of there's that, and at least for in the Southeast, we have the Southeast Sustainability Directors Network that I think has been effective at sharing and promoting some of these best practices, as well as what, you know, what Sierra has done with this call.
This is Rick Riebstein again. I just want to say a very concrete example is interconnection fees. And in our town, Lexington, we had someone who is a solar professional who was able to fight the utility when they tried to impose really steep interconnection fees when the town put solar up for its own facilities. So looking at when towns put solar up for their own facilities and then how the utilities respond to that would be a very concrete example. And I just want to mention that many states have municipal organizations. We have a mass municipal organization in this state, and towns can ask that organization to lobby for them on these issues.
Anybody?
Yeah, this is Jeff from Clean Focus, and we actually, we're a solar developer. We actually have a large operation in Connecticut and have done projects on more than or with more than 40 municipalities in Connecticut. Oxon, just I guess two or comment and a question maybe. One is maybe for your next round of research or to follow up to this is interviewing some of the developers that are doing these projects, and again, as a stage two or next round for these things, because clearly we have a different perspective than what maybe you got from the individual towns. And then related to that, and this is more the comment, one of the things that was brought up is the education or lack of knowledge in some of these municipalities, and some people just don't have the expertise to really figure out what might be the way to go. And in some ways, we sometimes, although we do it much less now than we used to, kind of would reach out and try to do some of this education ourselves with the hopes that projects would transpire out of that work.
One second here, Jeff. Some people do not have their phones muted, and we're getting a lot of background noise. So please do that if you haven't already. Go ahead.
Continuing there, we would reach out to municipalities and help them or try to help them explore projects and things like that. And effectively, we were disincentivized by it because even if good opportunities came up, then these projects always had to go out to an RFP and became a public bid. And, our chances were no better than anyone else's, theoretically. And, so we kind of took a step back and wondered why we were investing that kind of time and effort into something. And, some other type of group organization or whatever that really can go in and do that initial upfront education, probably would be a more effective thing because, again, for a developer, there's almost no incentive to do that work, which we would do. And for private, organizations, we do that all the time. But in the public sector, it's a much less payoff on it in the big picture. So.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Jeff. Right, thank you for that suggestion.
Yep.
To interview the developers. I was because my sort of what I was trying to explain was engagement, town engagement. I wanted to sort of start from the town government's perspective, but I've also in the past interviewed. Investors for other energy projects, and you're absolutely right that they usually have different perspectives on these sort of policy issues, and so I can totally see expanding this research to include them. But you said that as a developer yourself, you have some different perspectives on this. Would you care to sort of share if if there's
qualify as a Well, I guess maybe different in the sense of, I think I 100% concur with what you said, that there's some municipalities that either have very motivated and or knowledgeable people or task force that are driving this, and they, have the foresight to realize that there's both economic and, sustainability benefits. And, once we've engaged, and again, an RFP will usually be the end result of that initial motivation on their part. But once we've engaged, either because we're just bidding on a particular project or set of projects, or we've been chosen as the select vendor, when you engage with those kind of companies, probably the ones that fall into your gold category, they go through much more readily and they're a lot easier to work with, and you don't have to go in and kind of start at ground zero. And so, it's sort of a virtuous circle, I think. And, those are the those are the communities we'd like to go back and work more in if we can, because we know how to do it. And they have either the leverage or, they don't care that, they'll push things through the utilities and use some of their political muscle if necessary. So it's a, It's a challenging area to work in without kind of having the knowledge of how to work with these municipalities. And so we've got some people who've been working with Connecticut municipalities for probably 10 years, and you kind of learn the ins and outs. But ultimately, it's got to be driven from their side, because as I mentioned, when we go in and try to create new opportunities, that just ends up being sort of a dead end until the community itself actually engages in it.
Shira, I just want to interject one thing. As far as communities and peer pressure is concerned, in Colorado, Boulder is in the midst of municipalizing, and that drove a lot of other cities to start thinking about it as well. And as a result of that and pressure put from Minneapolis, Xcel Energy is now, as you may already know, but they're going to be integrating a lot of renewable energy into their mix. And they have claimed to be, 100% or 50% or something like that by 2025. Can't remember the exact dates. But it made a huge difference. And the pressure from the cities is really a part of what drove them. And they stated that as well as the economic end of it, where renewables right now are actually less expensive than fossil fuel. So I think it can make a huge difference if communities understand from one community to the other the economic benefits of the first community and then use that as peer pressure to get the other ones to move forward and then collectively put pressure on the utilities.
This is Jerry Braun out in California. I'm really happy to the discussion is focused on something other than California, because it's been very informative. And what I particularly like is I think that the research is really important if it can be percolate into the policy arena, both at the state level and at the local level. I want to reinforce based on our experience in our city a couple of the points that Oakson made. I think we all probably intuitively understand the need for champions, but I think in the deeper you get into local energy, the more it's important to have champions who are have some credibility related to energy service, energy policies, and so forth. We were fortunate in our city that we did have that, I think partly because we're very close to the state capitol and we have lots of people who work in the state capitol and a lot of people who have that kind of background. But it's really important to have not just champions, but champions who the elected officials can see as, okay, they know what they're talking about. They think we should do something. That's good enough. It doesn't cost anything. That's the other thing. The second point is, I've given some talks to this group about, about the things like net metered solar and so forth. I think there really is a big effect, as the research suggested, that when people take personal action, they become active, beyond the personal action, because they see the personal action as important, but they want to see their community do something. And then finally, I would also reinforce the term Oaks of News was feedback politics, and it certainly matters. It really matters that something was attempted, even if it was a failure, because it gets people involved, it gets them thinking, and it gets them realizing that they can have some influence. We had a situation in our county and city where we wanted to be annexed by a municipal utility. And it was a huge political battle, but it got and we lost. But it got people to the point that they were interested. There were groups formed. There were people who knew each other, and it led to, I think, eventually our ability to move forward with community choice. So those are a couple of comments. And then lastly, I guess if there's more on the question of how do local groups and local governments interact collaboratively and productively with the energy utilities, because I think you can, that's something that I need to think more, maybe needs a little bit more research, because if you you can only go so far, as Rick and others have pointed out, without the intention on the part of the utility, which is hopefully driven by public intention, the intention to support what local jurisdictions and citizens want to do, I think that really does require state intervention. It requires a recognition, first of all, that we're heading in a direction from a technology point of view where, you know, the collaboration and integration locally is going to be absolutely critical. And if the states don't intervene to create the right framework, things are going to slow down. Those are comments, and I didn't mean to talk so long, but some reflections on a very valuable piece of information.
This is Michael again. I just wanted to really quickly throw in a sort of a word for the necessary development of smart grids within this conversation. The carrying capacity of a grid within a city for renewables is going to be limited by the technology that they have in place there. So, you know, it isn't enough for the city to just sort of understand and care and invest in renewables. It will require that technological advancement with communications and storage to really allow for that growth to continue and be sustainable.
Sean, do you want to comment on that?
These are all very helpful. Thank you so much. It actually made me think about something, and I'd like to pose it to the group, this question. As much as I explained in the beginning to the local level policymaking is so important, and there's obviously something very democratic about it and wonderful about it, right, to have this sort of bottom-up energy transition. And that's a desirable thing. But I wonder sometimes, especially given these sort of utility constraints with utility the grid sort of the technology and also the grid capacity, I wonder if some of this decision-making needs to – let me put it this way. This is sort of playing into the debate that we have in Connecticut and other New England states, I would also think. This sort of very small town level decision making, how efficient is it? Whether or not there should be, in Connecticut, for instance, we don't have county level sort of administrative units. Whether or not that would be more effective as an organizational sort of from an organizational perspective. I wonder what everyone thinks about that. Whether this sort of trying to have individual small towns having this much autonomy, is there anything inefficient in that? And whether maybe more concentration of or bigger units, larger units, would be much more effective?
This is Rick Reifstein. I think you can take that question apart by looking at requirements whether the county has or regional authority has you know, regulatory powers, and or you can look at whether they engage in education and assistance and planning. In Massachusetts, the regional planning agencies have been critical to the town's abilities to do community choice aggregation and think about solar policy, but they have no authority. So it's limited, but you should. There are a number of different things that they can do, and I think to take that question, that to answer that, you need to probably look at each activity.
Okay.
Yeah, this is Jeff. So I would, you know, again, just a comment from a developer perspective. I think it's sort of a double-edged sword. You know, the each individual municipality driving these things, you know, it requires a lot more administrative work on our part. There's more RFPs to respond to, more, you know, individual people we are working with, et cetera, et cetera. And so, you know, logistically it's more complicated and does drive up some costs. And the projects are generally smaller, so that, again, drives up some costs. The flip side being is these municipalities, when they're motivated, can make things happen much more quickly. You know, if you get to the larger organizations, be it, you know, county level, if it existed, or even at a state level, it typically means years of effort and, you know, PUC involvement, et cetera, and it just, you know, it stretches out the process in exchange for, you know, greater volume and efficiency. So, you know, I think it goes both ways.
Thank you. That was very helpful.
Shell and Frank, do you have any comments about any of this?
Hi, Sierra. Excellent research. I do think the role of the utility is really key, and I think there may be some opportunities to kind of code for that variable in any follow-on research because there are the seven co-ops in Connecticut. Or if you're able to extend into Massachusetts, there's a lot more municipal utilities in Massachusetts, and being able to differentiate the outcomes based on the utility structure, I think could help shape some of those conversations like Boulder has been having for municipalization, or help some of the towns band together to be a stronger force in the state level regulatory discussions.
We have about 1 minute left here.
Hey, Sierra Sperney, I just offer a personal comment. I just think that Oxanne's research actually had quite an impact on me. Oxanne, I didn't really tell you this, but I lived in a box. The relationships and the power structures that we had in our town, I took as givens. I took them as not changeable, and because you sort of posed a problem, I came at it from a technical, you know, solar panel, heat pump sort of electrical standpoint, but I didn't come at it from a political standpoint. And I think as my thinking has evolved, as I start to think that's another dimension for action. In other words, every relationship, every power structure, it is what it is, but that doesn't mean it has to be that way. And I've started to look for other examples. I've started to look to other jurisdictions for alternatives to what is. So it's really been beneficial to me to think in a dimension that you have done your research in.
Thank you, Bernie. I likewise, you're one of the people I interviewed, so I learned a lot from you, and you have an amazing skill of sort of analyzing things. So I thank you so much for that.
Okay,
we're going to end this right now. Coxon, it was a very interesting presentation. I think a lot of people have gained a lot of benefit from it. We really appreciate you doing that. And thanks for everybody else for coming today. I think we need to turn that into a webinar. Actually, I'll talk to you about that. I have some information that I think a lot of people in this country would really benefit from hearing. So, we have a webinar, speaking of webinars, coming up in a couple of days here. And hang on one second here. We're going to be talking about Mark and Bernie are going to be talking about what's going on in their area as far as, I can't even think of the topic right now. Go ahead and tell me what it was.
Facilitating the adoption of clean energy in Connecticut.
Yeah, there you go. Close enough. So you might want to tune into that as well. So anyhow, we'll end it right now, and hope to see you all next time. Thanks for coming, and a great call.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you all.
Thank you.